We're in the major geek center here. Where are we? Huh. So who are you?
So I'm Gary Wiseman. I'm the PUM for the Classifieds team. And I guess I'm a bit of
now, are we MSN anymore? Or are we live?
We're part of Windows Live.
Okay.
So we're part of the new wave of services that are going to be launching as part of Windows Live.
Great.
And so Fremont is basically...
That's the code name?
Fremont's the code name. It's not going to be the release name.
Okay.
We're still working on that. But basically, the whole concept started...
We have a whole marketing team that'll come up with a really boring long name.
I wish we did.
With a year in it.
I really wish we did. We've been through a bunch of processes so far, and we've got a couple of fun names that we might go with. But so basically, the idea of Fremont kind of spawned around January, February, when I was talking to one of our execs, Yusuf Mehdi, about some of the future areas that MSN wanted to move into. And we'd recognized that Craigslist had done a fantastic job at presenting local classifieds for people. And they were covering an area that eBay didn't, because eBay is all about finding that unique item across the country. It doesn't matter where it's located. People got used to paying using PayPal and shipping, et cetera, et cetera. But they didn't really supply the facilities for if you had your couch, you wanted to sell it. It would probably cost more to ship the couch than it was worth. And so for that, for local services and those sorts of things, Craigslist really picked things up.
Yeah.
And so Yusuf was kind of fascinated with this idea, and we've not really touched on classifieds at MSN since we started. We've had deals with Match.com and various other partners. But he really felt that with some of the services that we have in place today, we could make something special, a special sort of scenario set for people to come and enjoy a new listing experience. And I did a bit of research. I had a deep dive into eBay, and it was fascinating to see what they were doing with classifieds internationally. So they launched a bunch of sites called Kijiji, which apparently means village hut in Swahili. So where their naming people come from, I don't know, but it's very creative. And so they'd also invested in Craigslist, which we could see was probably more likely to be a way of gathering intelligence and knowledge about how to run a community the way Craig does, because the fascinating thing about Craigslist is that it's a lot of it's self-policed.
Yep.
So the abuse reporting, etc., etc.
Yeah, how many cities does he have?
Oh,
dozens.
It's
I think it's over 50 now.
Now who's talking behind me?
Kurt Weber.
What's your name?
I'm Kurt Weber.
Kurt Weber.
On the GPM.
Oh, cool. Yeah, 50 cities, and I just met him a couple weeks ago. He has 18 employees, so that shows you how big a system you can run with very few people.
Yeah, exactly, and that actually kind of touches on our team. We're at 6 people, so it's definitely a new model for us, and that's the incubation style, and try to get it up and running as fast as we can, and using the Scrum methodology as well.
What's Scrum methodology? I don't think we've talked about that on Channel 9 yet.
Sure. So Scrum methodology is based around the idea that you have 30-day sprints. So you have the ability to lock in feature requirements from the business folks, and those folks are called chickens. And once that kickoff starts, they basically can't derail the dev team. So then the dev team is very focused for the next 30 days, not only in developing, but also debugging, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that at the end of the 30 days, we have a demo to ship, or a prototype of those work items to ship. We evaluate and then repeat.
Yeah.
So it helps us to be extremely flexible in terms of kind of what we're doing.
So you're running very much like a Silicon Valley startup or whatnot, real small, real lean.
Yep.
Do you guys build the infrastructure you're running on, or somebody else builds that? Or
It depends on which infrastructure you're talking about.
Yeah.
We definitely have, and Doug can actually talk a little bit more about the architecture. But then in those cases where we want to tie into existing architecture and coolness across MSN, like ABCH, which is the address book for all the contacts, then we can tap into ABCH. So it's, and you know, there's other teams available as well, like storage, etc. So we can leverage existing architecture.
Before we get too deep into the weeds,
sure.
what makes Fremont better than Craigslist or eBay, or what makes it different, maybe? You know,
I think there's three or four things that really help us to be a little bit more, a little bit different than the other teams out there. First, we allow people to really connect with each other. So we leverage the social networks that you already belong to. So your Messenger buddy list, for instance. Your email groups. So these are the folks that share the same email domain name as you. So whether that's college students sharing the same, you know, at u.washington.edu,
yeah,
or whether it's Boeing employees at boeing.com. So you can actually keep the social network as a real social network offline and connect with those people basically that you trust. And then second, when we go into looking at how we leverage what we have at Microsoft and the live.com services, we also can tap into a pretty significant audience. So if you want to expose your listing to a lot of people, you can do that.
Yeah.
But if you want to keep it into your trusted circles or your circles of trust,
right,
if you've ever seen Meet the Fockers,
yep,
then you can do that. So we enable a bunch of different scenarios.
I'm impressed you said that name on camera.
I pronounced the O, not the O.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, cool.
And then third, we actually have a number of tools that help us to keep the place secure,
yeah,
and trustworthy as well. So we're going to integrate with reputation and other tools,
yeah,
as well, so that the community can really keep the vibrancy, if you will, of the experience.
Yeah, that's why I always start when I talk to services. I like to know what is it built on. You know, is it one box sitting underneath your desk, or is it, you know, a world-class server farm,
right,
that's, you know, federated over several server farms or whatnot, because those are the things that I'm betting my, you know, business or classifieds or my,
yeah,
life on,
yeah,
these services, and I want to know that they're going to be around and that they're not going to just disappear on Sunday.
Right.
Because you guys went on...
So the way we've architected this is that we follow the service-orientated architecture. So we have plugged into other existing services like storage, and I'm sure Doug will go more into the actual architecture later on. But so we have storage as a way of storing images. So that, again, took away the need for us to have lots of servers with storage capabilities, because Spaces already takes care of that. We have Messenger, which takes care, obviously, of the contact management in the buddy lists. Then we have MapPoint, which provides us with lookups for lat long for all the addresses. We have Virtual Earth. So we have all these other services that are around us that support the core system.
Yeah.
The core system itself is all 64-bit. It's built on Windows 2003 server, 64-bit. We've used WIDB or Visual Studio 2005, so that's ASP.NET 2.0. We have SQL 2005. And so we've really taken advantage of the latest technology as far as we could. And it has given us some real nice advantages with some of the new features in SQL that have enabled us to...
What are some things that you can do with the new technology that you couldn't do with older stuff?
So with ASP.NET, I think we've really taken advantage of things like master pages for creating templating across the site, which is a real neat thing that we made a lot of use of. We've also, with SQL 2005, there's a few pieces of functionality like the increased way of doing paging on SQL rather than having to do cursor runs on the front end, which saves us a huge amount of overhead. So there's been little things like that which are very applicable to the kind of service we've built. And so at the back end, the way we've scheduled things out, it does have multiple tiers, but we can have, say, the middle tier running on the front end boxes as well. So we have a whole sort of service broker type architecture in place that scales out pretty nicely.
Yeah.
So the other thing that Kurt didn't touch on was the fact that we really want to aim for distribution of listings. So when a user comes in and lists an item on Fremont, we want them to feel like their listing is going to be seen by as many people as possible. And so one of the real neat things that we managed to do by working with the Spaces team is to have a Spaces module that will appear on people's Spaces. If you list a module with us, you'll automatically have your listing appear on your Spaces homepage.
Okay.
So there's a nice integration point
now
there.
Now, can I put it on a different kind of blog, or does it have to be MSN Spaces to use
so
the component?
We'll support RSS for all of the feeds and save searches as well.
Okay.
Okay.
So you can have your listing show as an RSS feed, which you can then import. But moving forward, we want to try and expand it so that people can add these, you know, it's more like widgets, like on live.com or start.com. And then there's also obviously integration with search.
Yep.
There's integration with Virtual Earth. There's integration with local. And we're going to try and fan out as much as possible to make sure that people's listings get the maximum exposure. So that was one of the key things that we were hoping for. And what I was saying earlier about the whole service integration side of things, I mean, Virtual Earth has been fantastic. You know, to work with those guys, it's been so easy to integrate using their controls. The same with the MapPoint service they provide. It's very, very simple. And so, like I said, as far as the actual architecture is concerned, Doug can probably talk more about that.
What about business model? Do I have to pay for a listing? Or?
No. So we're starting off with a free business model for the listings.
Okay.
And as we move forward, we'll have a more of an upsell opportunity for people. So as more and more listings come on board, we'd like to be able to have people given the opportunity to have their item appear on the top of the search results. We also have contextual advertising. And then moving forward, there's probably going to be some other opportunities for us to make revenue. But it's primarily, one of the focuses on the service was really about just building community. That was our primary goal. It wasn't to spin off a huge money maker. It was really to get people engaged with Windows Live services.
Okay. Cool. Are we going to see it?
Sure.
Yeah, let's see it, because then I'll probably drive a whole bunch of conversations. Yeah. Let me get my trip up organized here.
It's just a flash demo.
Oh. Yes,
we're all nice
yeah. Space bar.
Yeah.
That's right. So
yeah, I can see that.
So over at Windows Live Fremont Beta, basically you can see a variety of different categories. And the
now,
categories.
Is this public now?
This is public for internal employees.
So no.
Publicly private.
it's private through obfuscation, right?
That's right. So that's right.
If I put the URL on my blog, I'll be fired, right?
Well, people can't get in.
Yeah.
So you have to register first of all, okay. And you have to have it at microsoft.com account.
Yeah.
But when the video comes up, will there be a public beta that people can get in when the video?
It'll be limited. So okay. Basically, what will happen is that, as Kurt was saying, we're going to invite maybe some local companies like Boeing or Washington Mutual or a few other local area companies to come in, try out the system, see if they understand email groups as a concept, because
mm-hmm.
this is something that's new. Like at Microsoft, we know that with Micronews ads, for many years, we've been able to post listings on there. And you know, it's all Microsoft people you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the same company, they're probably quite near you, and you have a higher level of trust. I think Facebook may be somewhat similar in the idea of using email domains as a way to let people into the service. But for us, it's kind of an experiment to see if they get it. And if it's of any value to people that, you know, you can deal with colleagues. Because it's been kind of, you know, we've had mixed feedback. Some people love it, and the others say, well, why would I ever sell to a colleague? So part of this is going to be trialing out and getting more feedback from folks. And then we're going to go larger in January as a full release. Yeah.
Well, if you buy something from someone that you know where they live, mm-hmm. or how to get in touch with them,
mm-hmm.
then that's a good thing.
Yep.
So when Robert tries to sell me some bogus piece of software, I know where I know where he is.
That's right.
I know where you are, Scoble.
Oh yeah. So that's
very interesting.
I buy
cool.
tickets from employees and stuff before.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to offer this as an internet service to companies then? Sort of like what our Micronews classifieds is.
We've actually looked at, for instance, co-branding internally to other companies. But our main focus, getting back to what Gary has said, mm-hmm. is really just building out the community, and it's on the public web. So
yeah,
cool. So let's look at it.
Sure.
What is this thing?
So we have a variety of different categories available, anywhere from autos to events and tickets, housing, jobs, personals, all the way through merchandise, etc. And this, all the categories will actually grow as we go. So the community will actually contribute to how this thing ends up being shaped. In addition to that, we have an events calendar. You can see a few different random listings. These are all live listings now from internal employees. And even in the random listings category, you can see the variety of postings. So you see that someone wants some tickets. Someone's looking for a vacation home. So, Windows Rights Management is hiring, and there's a yellow kids slide available.
Mm-hmm.
Below that, I can actually view what my Messenger buddies are currently posting. and what they're listing. So you can see Karen, for instance, has some rollerblades for sale. They probably won't fit my feet. But you can notice, so Jason has a DVD for sale for, you know, based on The Matrix. Pretty cool. It's $5. I can swing by his office and pick it up. In addition to that, we have a community voting module, which is called Cool Listings. And these are swapping out each day, so you can see we've got clever postings, and then others are
pretty straightforward. Now, are those watched by people? What's the algorithm that watches for cool listings?
It's actually just based on people who actually vote based on the listing. So
ratings.
Exactly. So if I look at this yellow slide, I can go ahead and vote and say, hey, this is a cool listing. And if more and more people vote for that yellow slide, it shows up in the top 10.
Are you going to have more interactive features as time goes along, like a slider maybe?
Sliders. We like sliders, actually. So you can actually, when you're looking at the site, you can actually change your location with a slider. So, for instance, I may want to search the entire U.S. for a particular item, or I may want to narrow it to Seattle plus 50 miles for a different item.
Got it.
So, for instance, if I'm looking for a ticket, I'll likely want to keep it within Seattle. But if I'm looking for a rare collectible, I would want to look across the nation. That's something that we haven't really seen too effectively out in the marketplace.
Sure.
Likewise, you can actually also slide your community. So, for instance, you can look at everyone. So these are all the public listings out there. Or you can narrow it to just your email group, so just your coworkers, or all the way back to just your messenger buddies.
Okay. So you guys are using, what is it called these days? Atlas? Extensively? Well, I mean, XHTML. I mean,
you're just Ajax is what you're thinking.
Ajax.
About.
So,
and yes, we are using it extensively to do bits and bobs like that.
Right. And here's an example, for instance, of some Ajax. So if I do a search for Ford, you can see in the fast category, we actually suggest a category for that Ford. And then the attributes are relevant to a Ford car. Mm-hmm. So you can see year built, make, price, etc.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just the XML HTTP object that you're using async. I mean, Ajax. All right.
Basically.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just don't know why it's called that. And I mean, we created it. All right.
Cool. Some more cool stuff, being able to map the listing. So if I want to look to where this slide is,
nice.
It's the Virtual Earth integration. You can slide it down and really zoom in with Virtual Earth and switch to a road view and zoom in further and say, you know what, that slide is in my neighborhood, I'm going to go pick it up.
And then really put cool. it right here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in other words, you know where the person's really lives, it's selling you something.
If they opt in to
show
you.
If they opt in.
Right.
So it'd be a part of a trust group. I mean,
exactly.
By default, you should not do that.
Correct. So if and they opt in, you know, when you're actually in the email groups, you can show that.
And it's going to vary by item. For example, if you've got a garage sale on, you want to let people know where you're at so they can drive to your house.
Absolutely.
If you've got a car for sale, you don't want to tell them what address it's parked at because it won't be there the next morning.
Sure.
So it's going to really vary based on the kind of items that are listed.
Absolutely.
And do you want to show the search results with the maps as well?
Yeah.
It's quite powerful.
So if I do a search, for instance, for a condo, I can see all the condos that are listed currently. And so there's 4 condos available. If
now
I map these.
How does it know where you are? How did it?
When I register with the site, my profile, I basically said, hey, I'm in Seattle,
okay.
And here's my zip code. So everything's geocoded, and then pivots off of that so that
Very cool.
we can then provide driving directions, et cetera.
Cool.
And you can actually change that as well. So you can change your location in that same area the slider was.
Mm-hmm.
So you can change your city. And then cool. the slider will adjust. So even if you put a custom city in, like Snoqualmie, you can then do the slider to say plus 50, plus 100, et cetera, et cetera.
And can you actually type in, like, you know, Los Angeles or San Francisco?
Exactly. Wherever you want. It's all based on map points lookups.
Very cool. That's a really nice, very nice UI you guys have.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Why don't we...
Are you the guy who coded that?
Actually, yes, for that particular dialogue I am, but all credit for the UI goes to the designer. We have a great designer on our team who's been real, just fabulous to work with. She's come up with some great stuff. It's a shame she's not here.
Are you the developer?
I am. I am a developer on the team. We have three developers currently. Out of the three, I'm the guy who does the work towards the rear of the system, you know, the SQL and the stuff in the back end currently. We have other guys for the rest of the middle tier and the front end, and I think everybody here is just absolutely fabulous.
Cool. How do you like working with all the new tools that just came out?
I love it. I couldn't ask for a better position.
Are you writing your sort of procedures in C#?
No.
I haven't met anyone yet that's taken advantage of that. I mean, once you write Transact SQL, because I do the same for Channel 9, it's like, yeah, I could do it in C#. It'd be cool, strongly typed, blah, 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 right. Debug. Well, debug is amazing. Yep. Anyway, it's a side. But people should
Geek Talk. Look I like into it. That. I like listening to Geek
they
Talk.
They should look into that because you can actually debug, which you can't do. Right. Transact. You have to write your little things to figure out where you are. I mean, it's just not really programming.
Right. Yeah.
But
cool.
So should we post a listing?
Oh sure.
And fortunately, with our post a listing process, our whole emphasis has been on trying to lower the barrier as much as possible. So.
Cool.
It's a three-step process. We basically select a category. For instance, I'll say autos. I'll post a car for sale. Likewise, I could say wanted. I'm looking for a car. I've got a car, you know, for free, etc. And then I can go ahead and fill out the form and say, hey, I've got a Honda Civic for sale. I'm going to sell it for $9,000. It's a great commuter car. Reliable. And add more and more details if I want. The other things that we can offer the user is that if they have details, more details, the power users can actually go ahead and add in attributes. So for instance, I can add in the year built, which is a 2001. I can add in the make, the model, put in the mileage, 90,000, the color, and then my location, and also determine when I want it to have that listing expire.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Can you put a photo up?
Sure. So first we define who we want to list the item to. So right now we'll have it available to everyone.
Okay.
And then I can also promote my listing by add IM me with MSN Messenger to the listing. Mm-hmm. And in just a few weeks we'll be able to add it to your space.
There's also some great scenarios with the why would you list it to a certain audience first? Because you can change the audience once it's listed after a few days if you feel like it. Like tickets is a great one. So you've got a spare ticket to the game, you know, your buddy couldn't go, and you can either sell it to a stranger, or it'd be cool to see if, you know, your Messenger buddies would like to take this first. And so with the integration we'll have with Messenger, we'll have the gleam will appear if you've got an item for sale, so that your Messenger buddies can tell that you're actually listing something new, and then they go, hey, what's that? And it pops up on the contact card. They click on it, come here, and they go, yeah, I want to go to the game with you.
Very cool. Now, that the interesting thing, the clearly, in this case, for Messenger in the browser, it's only going to work in IE, correct?
No.
Or,
no.
That's good. That's what I wanted to hear.
This also works in Firefox.
Sweet.
The entire site works in Firefox. So it's, we've
done
it.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
We've done as much as we can. We love, you know, we love live.com. We know Steve Ryder very well. We've debated back and forth on various issues with the UI. And we've tried to make it as accessible as possible by all the popular browsers.
Fantastic.
It even works on Mac, on all kinds of odd browsers I've never even heard of.
Yep.
Sure. Fantastic. So, that's incredible to know.
Mm-hmm.
If we just want to add a couple of images, select image, browse. Let me grab some images here. Upload and it does it in line without refreshing the page, and add a couple more images. And then we can select a template. So I can change the template on the fly and look at what the actual listing is going to look like. And eventually we'll have a lot of rich templates. It helps to make it a little bit more fun for users.
Really cool.
Makes each listing unique, which allows you to stand out in the community, which, you know, in my mind is going to help build that sense of community.
Fantastic. And you had mentioned that all of the data is exposed via RSS, or was that a different interview you were doing?
No.
Is that the
same?
No,
it's us.
And that's awesome.
And so where's the RSS button's on the top. I saw it on the top of one of the pages.
Yeah, it's on the top of each of the search results and categories.
Yeah.
Cool.
So if I click post a listing now, we're done. We go live. I don't actually have this Civic for sale on a real site, so I'm not going to post the listing.
Which brings up an interesting point. Like, so how, you know, sometimes, is this going to be self-policed, like Craigslist?
It's partially, so there's a combination of things. So we do have some technology at the back end that will alert us, and obviously without giving away too much.
Sure.
So there's certainly an option for the community, alongside where it says cool listing, they can also report a bad listing.
Yeah.
And it will be acted on then. And on top of that, like I said, we do have some technology in place that will alert us automatically of bad listings. But we're hoping that in a lot of cases it should be taken care of by the community. But the site is supported.
Interesting. What was I just thinking? Yeah, so you can...
You can get out of post the listing. Yeah. I mean, we'll just close it.
That would give us a good chance to show off also the administration utilities that each user has at their disposal.
Yeah. So I went ahead and just posted the Honda Civic. Now I can email my friends to say, hey, here it is. I can also go to that actual listing. It's available now on the site. I can view the map. I can close the listing immediately if I want.
Close it. That's only because you're... Remove it or just close it?
Close
is
not open anymore.
Actually, close is for my personal listings. I can actually close them once I've sold them.
Ah, okay.
Or I can go ahead and edit it. And now it's fully searchable in the...
That's what I was going to ask. Is there any way to rate the buyer or the seller? You know, so the community can, over time, say, hey, this guy really has his act together. And
right, so we're working on reputation. You'll see it in the coming weeks.
Okay.
Yep. The other thing, you should try and show off the feature with Messenger Blind IM integration.
Yeah.
Because that's super cool.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you could edit the listing and enable it.
That's a good idea. So if I go into my listings.
So how does it know who you are? Are you logged in with Passport or are you?
Yes.
Okay.
So you can actually access the site when we're public without Passport. But anytime you want to post a listing or message another member, you need to sign into Passport.
Okay. Fair enough.
It may seem like a barrier, but actually I think it's going to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. In that one of the issues we've found in some of the other services where everyone's anonymous is that you get a lot of spam and phishing. And it's a lot harder to control and get trust in those kind of environments.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you do have to sign up in order to get things done is actually a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the same reason why we have messages live internally. So if I send a message to Kurt on the service, it's not necessarily an email message, but it goes to his inbox within the system,
mm-hmm.
again, to avoid spam and phishing. So he can have an alternative email address that he uses to get the alerts on, but he doesn't have to be worried about getting mails from the service or spam.
Sure. At that moment, I mean, it's logically used Passport.
Now, you guys could be tracking the users quite heavily, right, and learning from their user behavior. What kind of stuff are you guys doing, and what kind of privacy policy do you guys have?
Our privacy policy is actually pretty strict. So we only look at aggregated data in terms of the use of the site.
Okay.
Unless someone has actually reported abuse, and then we have some administrative tools to go in and look at the listing and determine whether we need to pull it down for the community. Other aspects of the privacy, we basically adhere to the live.com privacy policy.
Okay.
So it covers us as well, and we're not doing anything particularly unique. We do actually show a few more rules or codes of conduct that are unique to this particular site compared to the rest of Windows Live. So we're actually a little bit more security-minded, if you will.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else I should?
One more.
What kind of
thing.
Question should a consumer of a site ask? You know, if they're choosing between Craigslist or eBay or XYZ site or your site, what kinds of things should they be worried about or interested in? Audience size is one.
Sure.
You know, having a vibrant buyer and seller community is going to be probably how you guys are going to succeed or fail, right?
Definitely. I think not only will we have the potential to have a pretty significant audience, but we'll also offer pretty unique scenarios so that you can actually use your network and trust relationships to do buying and selling. And that's something that is pretty unique to us compared to what you might see out there.
Yeah.
Other cool things, you know, the communication tools are expansive. So, for instance, I can actually IM now. This is myself, so I have IM exposed. I can launch an IM with a complete stranger and can close
that
transaction.
And how are you achieving that?
So you opt in to expose Messenger on your actual listing. And lo and behold, about 2 days ago, I sold my TV via Messenger.
Yeah.
Got an IM saying, hey, your TV's for sale. We arranged it, and within 2 minutes, the whole transaction was done, and I dropped off the TV yesterday.
Wow. Now, what does it add in my MSN message? What does the UI look like for a sale? You know, for a pending
right
sale like this.
So we use
and
the
does
actual
it go away? Like once
right
your TV was that guy still in your IM client?
Oh yeah, but we're good buddies now. we actually use the existing Messenger protocols, so
okay
you actually add him as a buddy, either as a buddy or just as a single conversation.
Okay.
So I can always turn down the conversation if I believe that this person is not someone I want to expose the messenger to.
Okay.
So
and
when you so when you initiate a
just click on it.
Yeah. So this is the message I would see.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're doing.
That gets thrown up saying, hey, do you want to start a conversation with this person? On the other end, the other person gets an invitation. Hey, Kurt's looking to have an IM conversation with you, which you'd like to proceed. If
yeah
you say no, you can go ahead and block that person.
So for other Messenger clients, you could just use their protocol if they're on the system, no?
Potentially.
Yes. Cool.
eBay,
really?
All a lot excellent of other companies have a lot of rules on what you're not allowed to sell and stuff like that.
Right.
Do you guys have a similar list of things that are allowed to be
right
sold in the system and not allowed, like, obviously you're not allowed to sell legal drugs here, right?
Correct. Right, so we do have
Charles is going, damn! I was going to start a whole drug cartel.
Yeah,
we dropped that one from the taxonomy.
it was a hard choice.
So
yeah
we do have rules in which
sure
you can post listings on.
And of course it's going to be international, or so
yes
you'll have to deal with the international rules. Like if I want to sell
yeah
something and ship it overseas, there's American export laws.
It's, yeah, and there's also just the you know, the issues with what is acceptable in certain countries versus what's not. Because
yeah, sure
as we are created, it's user-created content here.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to have similar issues to some of the other services out there when we move into certain countries.
Right.
But it's nothing that's, you know, too hard to get over.
Now, if I sell my TV for $100 to you,
mm-hmm,
do I have to pay? Do I have to pay live?
No,
pay,
see, there's no transaction fee, and that's one of the motivations that we want to open up as much communication as possible because we don't have a fear that the transaction will take place off of our system,
okay,
and we're not going to lose revenue as a result. So that way, it's all about the community, and you know, if you and I want to talk over the phone, you know, that's great. We can close the transaction offline.
Okay,
but I mean, there's a potential to advertise, right?
Potential to advertise.
Sure, for on the site revenue. I mean, you want to generate some
oh
revenue. We're not going to be
yeah
naive.
No, no, we do. We do.
Like
exactly. So when in the different categories, you could imagine, for instance, going back to the Ford scenario, in the autos category, you're going to see a bunch of contextual links available for Ford dealership, auto parts,
sure,
etc.
Okay.
And so we actually believe that not only are those links more relevant for the users,
mm-hmm,
but the advertisers will pay more because you're in a buying mindset.
Yeah,
you're
sure
looking for a Ford, or you're looking for tickets, etc.
Or you're looking for olive oil.
That's right.
For, I must say, I mean, when I go to when I used to go to Google, or right, I don't use Google anymore. when I like search for olive oil or something or whatever, the contextual links were always the most useful for me because
right
here's a company that all they do is sell olive oil. Perfect. Click, buy. So, excellent.
Yep. Cool. Anything else we should know about this?
Can we talk about the development at all? I mean,
yeah,
it's
sure,
I mean, that's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So,
what was that kind of?
let's talk about, so XHTML, these are all the things people are going to want to use, right? So you use a lot of CSS for your formatting.
It's a lot of CSS. We use a lot of Ajax, as we call it. And basically what it boils down to is, like Kurt showed the category suggester. It literally boils down to us, the user's typing every time a character is put in. We send a call out asynchronously back to the server, process the request, and send back, you know, a blob of XML that we can then, of course, transform and insert into the document to show the user the results. They click on one of those links, another blob, you know, comes up to the server. The server sends back the blob that defines the form that's popped up over the main form.
Now, are these web services, or you're making calls to just ASPX page that generates XML?
Actually, these are, some of them are, in fact, ASP pages that do nothing but return blobs of XML, and some of them are true ASMX web services. There's not, you know, it all depends on the service by service. I think we have about 5 services in that folder, and we're discussing a couple of more, maybe opening up some protocols in the future to allow people to do, you know, other things, you know, widgets, gadgets that would hang off the back end of the service and allow them to do pretty much whatever they want.
Fantastic. In a secure sandbox.
In a secure way, of course, but, you know.
Fantastic.
You know, your listing's displayed how you want, where you want.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for developers who are trying to build a web site like this?
A website?
With Microsoft technologies?
I would say that ASP.NET is definitely your friend. ASP.NET 2.0 it's so much better than 1.1. When you get into the partial classes, you no longer have to, you know, put all the code that you used to into it. Things go together very quickly. I would say that, you know, if you do a lot of research into modular or object-oriented design, you're well on your way. And just keep it simple, keep it loose, and keep it inheritable, I guess would be.
For a service like this that's going to be freely available, how do you plan for scale? Because, you know, some of these things might not get taken up, but some of them might go nuts, right?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that.
How do you plan? Yeah, so that's sort of where I was getting at with the architecture. What, you know, how do you build these things so that you can plug in a few more boxes and just federate the data?
Gary had a good point. Currently, we are the middle tier exists on the web servers, and the objects are built in such a way that we can separate them just straight out and put them onto a separate set of boxes. So the web servers are being overly used by IIS. We can simply pull the middle tier off, free up a little more resources for IIS, and then as IIS grows, of course, you can just expand out from there and put more hardware in front of it. And you just have your load balancer take care of it from there. The middle tier objects, of course, you know, again, you know, just balancing across hardware. The database is actually the most beautiful design, and that was designed by someone else on our team. Basically, it boils down to the listing data is written to a series of partition databases on different servers. We allow the code to, we tell the code how many database partitions there are, and the code takes care of for this listing, for this user. We assign them a partition based on their passport identity, and then all their listings and all their messages go into that partition. We use SQL replication to aggregate all the data into one place, and that's the search cluster. So as we grow, currently, you know, we have n number of partitions, n is greater than 1. I don't want to say too much, of course, just a couple of pieces of hardware. So if we go to the point that hardware becomes overloaded writing all that data, we can now take some of those partitions and scatter them across several other pieces of hardware if we've hit the maximum hardware allotment, and then aggregate the data back in. If, for whatever reason, we separate the partitions all the way out, it's simple enough to go back in, reverse engineer the math, and assign you a new partition and grow the number of partitions. It's just a question of writing the script. Once the data is aggregated in one place, we use SQL replication again, send it out to a wide array of search servers, and then it's just drop another box into that cluster, you know, enlist into the data, and boom, you're ready to go.
Yeah. Cool. Now, how do you make such a system secure so that
passport plays.
My 12-year-old son can't get in and play around.
Well, if your 12-year-old son has a passport, passport account, he can of course sign in and search the listings. It entirely depends on what level of security you're looking at in terms of when I think security, my primary concern is SQL injection, cross-site scripting, making sure all the input that comes in is clean. That's one level of security, and then there's the access levels of security. You know, whether or not the listing, which is intended for buddies only, whether or not a person who is a buddy can see that listing or not. It all depends on where you're concerned about your security.
So you have various layers.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm too right. verbosely trying to say.
No, it's great, but I mean, that's the point.
And also, I mean, we do excellent. Go through a very stringent security review. So it's not just at the application level, but also at the network level to make sure that everything is as tight as possible. And one of the other things we do is to make sure that we avoid such things as script injection and other kinds of ways of hacking the services. We do actually get people in to try and hack the service. So we'll have them hammer the service and find out any loopholes or weaknesses, and then we'll continue to improve that.
You know, that brings up an interesting point. Have you considered, we've done this a few times as a company, put it up live, you know, for but not where you can actually, I don't know, make it sort of a hack fest. Invite random people to take you down. And then, but if they do take you down, they don't really hurt you because you don't really have customers yet.
Right.
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting way to get the community really involved with security. Because hackers, you want me to bring you down? All right. I'll try to bring you down. Then they bring you down, but no one gets hurt.
Steptoe went better. He brought the Blue Hat, which we have a video.
Sure.
He brought the Blue Hat group on the campus. And
the funny thing is, I don't think we don't need to invite anyone to do that.
Yeah.
Anything we put out there, we're going to have lots of very smart people trying to break the site in every way they can.
Sure.
And it's been fascinating to see what's happened to some of the social networking sites recently with some of the worm viruses.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good lesson in making sure that we, you know, do secure all of the possibilities for scripting to be closed down.
It's important to note that our security policies here are not just a one-time. You pass it, you're good. You never look at it again. This is something that at the server level they're doing, you know, monthly, if not more frequently. At the application level, we're doing many times a year. Every time we get ready to tell operations, okay, we've got a new release for you, they step back and say, okay, show us all of your security documentation that you've done it again.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear them and say, you know, we take security extremely seriously.
Totally.
So the other thing Doug didn't touch on as far as architecture was just the caching side of things.
So I think
it's worth the call out, you know, with obviously having 64-bit servers,
mm-hmm.
the fact that we have access to a lot more memory now. And so with the way we've architected things, we're able to cache a lot of stuff at the front end. And if you look at some of the scenarios we have, there is some very fascinating aspects to how we could cache stuff that are quite complicated that we've managed to put in place.
Mm.
And so, again, things like Ajax will also be able to help us partially with client-side caching. And so I think that, you know, the fact that it's a service-orientated architecture, as I was saying, we're going to eventually enable APIs that other folks can tap into. That's
cool.
going to play even further to our distribution play,
mm-hmm.
as far as having people pull their listings out to be shown on their blogs or
mm-hmm.
having applications written that search our data.
Sure.
So it's all going to be great for the consumer.
Is there any APIs so that I can include this? Well, you're including the service in innocent spaces like a tile, but I'm thinking of, can I use this service to build my own front end, you know, with my own brand and my own kind of maybe other services that are also going to be on the page and mash up, you know, you do this mashing of
so
services.
We're not really in a position yet to expose ourselves as a sort of a general store.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly we're going to try and provide as much access as people want to create these kind of applications.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they do want to create, you know, some special garage sale site, that as in virtual earth mapping with our listings going through them, that they're totally unable to do that. I think that's a very valid scenario. And you know, you think about the kayaking club, they want to have their members' listings show up on their site.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another fantastic scenario, and that you can only buy and sell stuff then within the kayaking club's community. I think that's you know, those are excellent scenarios we want to try and enable.
I was thinking of, if I owned a car dealership, I would want to maybe mash together three or four of these shopping sites together on one page, so you don't have to leave my experience, but you can
right.
still buy a car through these shopping sites.
Yeah, and we have RSS at sort of a basic level, so if you know,
sure.
even if you're not able to make SOAP calls or whatever other API we put in place, they always have RSS as a way to get to the data.
Fantastic.
Very cool. Cool stuff.
Very cool.
Nice.
That's, the UI is great. The experience looks great. I mean,
wow. This is the future of web development too.
So.
Pretty bleeding edge stuff. So thanks a lot.
Cutting edge, 5-year-old Ajax technology.
Hey,
but
you know.
I'm just playing.
I mean, you can do that with hidden iframes before.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I was reading an another article the other day about someone where they used JavaScript includes on the fly as a different layer. But the fact is it took someone to actually get ahead and do the stuff. So Outlook Web Access was a great leader in building these kind of apps. And then Gmail followed with its mail app. And so I think it's great that finally people are prepared to take the sort of the risks to go with the latest technology. And we've made extensive use of DHTML, you know, for the sliders and all those other pieces.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier nowadays to do cross-browser things from the old days when I used to code up things. So, you know, and with the tools, Visual Studio, it's really helped us be agile.
And your Ajax stuff works in
Firefox as well. You just use their control, which comes with Firefox.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very, very cool.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
All right, thank you. Guys.
Thanks.
Unicode.
So we're back on. So we were just talking, always when we turn off the camera.
Not the best, but good conversation.
Yeah.
So you were talking to us about globalization and the tools that you've used in Visual Studio 2005.
Right. And so, I was just saying that I remember about 7 or 8 years ago when we started looking at some of the international portal sites and globalizing those. In those days, it was still a bit unknown as to how to put together a site that was fully globalized. Mm-hmm. There were some concepts, but there wasn't really a strong concept like there was in C++. We'd separate the content from the code. What they'd do in those days is they'd just build another version of the site and localize the HTML, which is very inefficient. You couldn't share the same templates. You couldn't share code as well. And so over the years, obviously, the tools have gotten better. And Visual Studio 2003 had some good aspects to it as far as globalization was concerned. But with the latest version, it's even easier. It has some real good built-in tools that enable you to just go through, take all the resource files, and it can even automatically pull out the resource files for you. Hmm. So it's saved us a lot of time, and it's allowed us to get ready a lot quicker for new markets than it would have done a long time ago.
Fantastic. And so you just hand these resource files off to a localization team, and they just run them through a tool, or they just add manually?
Correct. And there's obviously, you know, you have to take care in the fact that the way you've designed the pages, that they're flexible enough,
mm-hmm.
so that you have, if you have larger characters, strings due to the language differences, so German is generally 30 to 40%
mm-hmm.
larger in its word size, that the HTML doesn't break. It's the usual rules. But also you can do pseudo-localization, which mm-hmm. I know there are little tools out there for, which will basically blow up the strings you have. And then show you the site to make sure it's all working and functioning as you expected and wrapping.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, again, it's just one of those tools that we've had in Visual Studio 2005. And the other thing Doug didn't mention was the testing tools.
Yes, mm-hmm. The testing tools. The other thing that I really like about ASP.NET 2.0 is built-in unit tests are fully integrated. So every component I write for the middle tier, just kick off, write a unit test for it. I get done at the end of the day. Build out the middle tier and run the middle tier unit tests. I get a whole bunch of little green circles in Visual Studio tells me I can go home for the day.
Nice.
One little red X, and I know I'm stuck there for another half an hour figuring out. You know, it's absolutely beautiful. Everything's automated, so we can automate our build process, verify our daily BBTs, and then when Gary comes in and says, "Doug, what's the status of the build?" I can one click of the button and say, "It's great."
Cool. You guys do daily builds then?
Yes.
Yeah. And do you use Visual Studio Team System then at all to do your source code management and that stuff?
Actually, we use, I don't know, is Source Depot internal only?
It's
Build
Tracker.
Yeah. So we use Build Tracker and Source Depot to do the builds.
Okay. Cool. We'll send the VSTS team over to
Well, is that released? It's released?
No, they're still
that's why. They're waiting for it to release.
Exactly.
They've already dog fooded, but they're old school.
They were.
We have a whole video up of that team and the hell that they went through switching over from Source Depot to their tool. But now they're liking it a lot. So.
That's good. Because
Product Studio was supposed to be part of Visual Studio 2005 at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
remember that the research fair.
And then they pulled it.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's coming out in next year. So.
And there's a Source Depot control for Visual Studio since a long time ago.
Right.
So.
Well, cool. Thanks for...
Fantastic.
No, don't say anything else interesting after I turn off the camera.
Then, of course, there's the...
Thanks, guys.